to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Apple, and we've got, there's not a lot of Apple news. There's an iPod come out, and there's a few conjectures about the A9 processor being done and that kind of thing. But what we have got for you today is something really, really cool, because we've got Hoyer Optics in the studio, and they're making a new set of specs, new range of optical devices and spectacles, and I'm going to review a pair. So Mark Culshaw from Hoyer has come down to measure me, and we'll do that in a second. And it's going to be pretty cool, I have to say. It might be a bit more video-oriented than audio-oriented, but we'll do our best to try and describe what's going on. Joining me, though, to join me through all of that fun and ask questions of Mark as we go along, a fantastic panel this week. Top left, Don McAllister, who has jumped out of his holiday season, especially. You stopped a holiday to come on here, didn't you, Don?
No. I got back beginning of this week, so just catching up, really. Just the usual frantic
mate.
Activity before I go. A week of rest and relaxation, and then another week of frantic activity, catching up, and then going on to the next one. So it's I'm fine.
I want you.
Pretty much caught up.
I want your life.
It has its ups and downs, but it's all right. It's all good.
Good, mate. Great. Thanks ever so much for stepping in as well.
Yeah, it's no
problem. Last minute. Next to him, it's the man from the Bloom cupboard. It's Adam himself, the man from Macbeth. What's happening?
Hey.
Oh, that's a sigh, buddy. What's up?
Nah, just messing. I'm trying to... I freaking hate IRC, is what it is.
It's not actually like it's got a hard job to do either, is it?
Well, the ident server is not responding, is what's happening, so my username
was having trouble getting in as well, so...
Doinked. Yeah. So, other than that, I'm great.
Good. Thank you
it's
very
Friday.
Much. Friday. Manny, who hasn't been around
my
for
hair's
a while.
Doing some funky stuff, too, but that's
okay. It's the first time you've been on without a cap for a while, I think.
Yeah, I probably should have threw a cap on.
No, you shouldn't.
Oh, well.
It's okay. No, you look dressed just fine, mate.
I got the bedhead. It's too early. Adam. Got a sty in my eye. The toilet's leaking. What else do you want to know that's wrong?
Bloody hell, mate. There's only death left, isn't there?
It's Friday. That's good. Friday.
You know when you get a sty in your eye, it's not like you're staring into the grave or anything, mate. It's just they'll be there a week or two, maybe, and that'll be it.
Yep.
We might have some
It's just irritating.
Because Mark from Hoyer here is a dispensing optician, so by trade, so he can probably tell you how to get rid of a sty. There we go.
Cool.
Have a think on that one, mate. There'll be some old grandma's recipe. Make sure it's got lemon juice in it, though. All right. Next to him, it's Doc. How you doing, mate?
Well, how's it going? You know, the best way to get rid of the sty in your eye is stop looking at... Never mind.
Yeah.
That's what the grandma used to tell you where it comes from. You've been watching something you weren't supposed to see.
That was.
Do you know what the first... Do you know what the first thing was I asked?
Then I'm doing it wrong.
Do you know what the first thing I asked Mark was when he came in the room?
What?
Was Doc talking bollocks last night? And do you know what he said?
He said, no, Doc's a genius.
No, he says you're talking bollocks.
BS.
No, what he said was, you've got the right thing, but for the wrong reason.
Well, who cares the reason? As long as it's working, dang funny.
No. It's got nothing to do with your blink rate. It's to do with the fact that your eyes, apparently the blue... Go on, Mark. Actually, come in here, mate. This is Mark from Hoyer Optics. There we go. Here's Mark. He's going to do some measuring of me in a bit. But explain to it what's... So it's not about your blink rate, is it?
He's already smart. He has the same haircut as me.
But it doesn't draw your eyes out. What it is...
So your blink rate's going to drop anyway.
Hello? See, that's the bullshit detector right there.
So yeah, your blink rate's going to drop anyway because you're staring at a screen.
Right.
The reason why you advise that particular product is that, well, it could be a number of reasons. One of the main ones is that your devices, your screens, they emit a lot of high energy blue light, and the blue end of the spectrum is a short wavelength. What that does, it scatters light, so it reduces contrast, which is important for when you're on your screens, obviously. But probably more importantly, the blue light actually focuses in front of the retina, and that stimulates extra focusing.
You have an incoming call from Don McAllister.
So the extra focusing that you're having to do because there's this excess of blue light tires the eyes out.
There you go. So
it still stops macular degen, which was the point.
Mm, The jury's out on that, Doc. There are studies ongoing right now, but there's definitely no hard evidence. You're not doing yourself any harm, and it may ultimately prove to be a good thing, but it's certainly nothing that we can say for sure right now.
There you go.
Yeah, hard evidence was my stripper name when I was in college.
So there you go. That loosely translated into Doc Talks Bollocks. So there you go.
No, I was right. I just said it wrong, damn it. Back it off.
You wish I hadn't asked him though, don't you? We'll be talking about that. We'll do an entire show on that after this is finished. That's the episode of The Pinch that's coming up. And last but by no means least, it's Steve Sandy, our man in the wilderness. How you doing, mate? Your beard, we've been talking about your beard just before we started. It is getting a bit Grizzly Adams, buddy.
Yeah, I think I've got to get a little bit of a trim on it one of these days. That and it's dark in this room.
It's not helping.
It's glowing. Yeah, it's kind of glowing here.
Yeah, but the problem is if we put a light on you, we get white out off your beard.
What's that?
If we put a light on you, we get white out off your beard, so we get flare, too much flare.
Yeah, maybe I need to get some Grecian formula or something like that. Or maybe just a black magic marker and I'll kind of color it in.
Excellent.
Think that would work?
Yeah, no, excellent. That would work, definitely.
And I'm sad to say that I missed the British, whatever it was called, the BTN Bash.
I can't believe you're actually in the UK.
I was actually in Liverpool on the day that you guys had your curry.
You were a donkey.
Wow.
Well, you should have... Oh, man.
Now you have no excuse.
Never mind.
Yeah, Don was at the bash. So what were you doing at Don's house?
That's what he was robbing him. Yeah, he was Don's at the curry getting pissed, and Steve's in there filching everything he's got.
It would have been a bit too far to go there and back in a day, though, I must admit. Especially if you had a boat to catch.
I had a boat to catch. So,
I was just thinking, I do Ipswich, work for 12 hours through the night, and then drive home, mate. And you're going, Liverpool's a bit far in the day,
if the boat's getting in the morning and you've got to get off the boat, then you're gonna miss Liverpool. Miss Liverpool or miss the bash.
You're damn desperate.
You can come to the bash next time.
That's right.
Next time.
There is a bit of Apple news this week, which we will get to in a second, but I wanted to start off with this because this is really cool. I was complaining that my new glasses that I've just got have got a bit of a curvature to them, and one of the followers and guy who's listened to the podcast for 4 years is Mark from Hoya, and he said, I'll sort you out, mate. We'll check out what's going on with those. We've got some new stuff. Maybe you'd like to review it. So I said, okay, that's fine. And in true full disclosure, if I'm going to review a set of prescription glasses, they've got to have my prescription in it. So I'm getting a free pair of glasses out of this, but he's come to measure me for using them in the studio so that they're specifically made just for using the tech that we've got in front of us. But what was really interesting, I thought it'd be great to get him on the Mac show, is the fact that Mark, you use the iPad massively for this, don't you?
Yeah, it's proved amazing for us. Not only for a level of accuracy which the high-end lenses require, but from a customer journey point of view in practice, it really adds a massive layer of customer satisfaction in the whole process.
Now, just the glasses themselves are amazing. I mean, the lenses, there's a special way that the lenses have been made, isn't there, to cut down on the...
Yeah.
Should we do a live thing on this? Because there's a little thing over the other side of the room here. If Muller can be cameraman. Now, I'm going to give you a pair of my glasses. Now, these glasses here are 3 days old. So I picked them up from the optician the other day. They've by no means had a torrid life or anything like that. So Mark's going to take those over. I'm going to give this to Muller, and he's going to show you what happens effectively with your glasses when they're manufactured. So off you go, mate. No, you need to go over with him, not me. So this thing here is a polarized, it's a dual polarized system, isn't it? So by, if you look at my glasses there, you can see just how clean they are. And then when he puts them under the dual polarizing lenses, look at that's the stressing from just the manufacture on my lenses. And all of that will change the visual acuity of the lens when you put it on. Now then, next thing is what's the name of these lenses again?
Avantech.
This is Hoya Avantech glasses. The lenses, and absolutely nothing.
Oh, wow.
So there is no, the way that they're, you're saying most lenses are ground, aren't they? But you're saying these are milled.
Yeah, that's correct, Ewan. Most Most spectacle lenses are cut on a grinding wheel, and it's kind of like a cam effect. So the finished lens shape goes around on a cam basis on the grinding wheel, and you end up with the finished shape that you require. The big difference with what we're doing here, excuse me.
That's right.
Is we're actually cutting the lens out using CNC milling technology, and we leave a little bit of lens on the temple side and a little bit on the nasal side.
Yeah.
And the mounts just attach to those little lens tabs.
Let's change the camera, there we go. Now what this results in, and these are true carbon fiber stems as well, aren't they?
Correct, you.
I mean, I've felt these things, and I can't actually show you without, you know, the weight or something. But what's the actual weight on these, pal?
Oh, you've got nothing. Me there. It's a minus figure.
It's they're hardly anything.
In I mean, fact, like these, I'm having to hold them down.
Yeah, they float. Yeah, these ones here are titanium lenses, titanium frames rather, and they are, I would suggest, maybe 8 times heavier.
Yeah.
I mean, those are, they're, when you've got them on, it's like you're not even wearing them. They're unbelievably light, I have to say.
So what we've got here is the finished titanium
carbon. It's, I mean, you see how they're wobbling there? If you guys have got questions, Mark can hear everything you say, so far away with anything. But
no, it's funny you're talking about that with the glasses, the sort of the old school way. If I put on my shades when I'm wearing my contacts, I can actually see that on my glasses anyway, just because I have all polarized shades. So yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, so you see the stressing?
Yeah. You can even see it in your car window. If you wear your polarized glasses and you stand in your car window at a certain angle, on some of cheaper course. Cars, yes. You can see the suction cup marks where they use the robot to put the glass in. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
How would you know about cheaper cars, Doc?
I said on some people's cheaper cars.
Oh, some people's, not mine. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Good lad. Thanks, man.
No, yeah.
So
they don't have that marks on BMW windows. Thank you.
Now, what's really cool, though, and the reason I've asked you on the Mac Show is the fact that you are using completely different technology for measuring the person when they're being fitted for the glasses, aren't they? Now, these are being released in October, so this is well ahead of time at the moment. But you said, what's the issues with measurement when you go to an optician normally?
Yeah. Okay, so I would say two major problems. One is that if you measure somebody manually, it's very difficult to ensure that there's no parallax error, because...
So if I turn my head even fractionally,
yeah,
you may not notice, but that will make a difference.
For sure,
to the...
that changes the position that your eye is within the lens, which I'm measuring to, which is then incorrect.
Right.
And the other thing, if I was in front of you and even 1 centimeter offset, that would induce enough error to cause an erosion in the visual quality of the end product.
Yeah, okay. So how are you getting around this? So you've got this little frame thing here now. If we go back to Muller, we can show it. So this has got like, this is classic, like, you know, impact dummy kind of marks, isn't it? So you've got reference points.
Yeah, that's right. So known distances. It's what's really important is it's a three-dimensional clip. So this part here,
so if you tilt
tells
that,
us,
there we go. So that allows the person who's doing the measuring to see if they're square or not and in the right position.
Yeah, and inevitably there will be some amount of level of them not being square, because if you take a quick look at somebody, 1 minute they might have a few degrees this way, the next the other way.
Mm.
So what's important is that we get that zero position.
Right, okay.
And what we can do here is...
Oh, there we go.
It will detect...
He's trying
how
to,
much rotation.
He's trying to line these up with about a half a second delay.
So, yeah.
So how does this interface with iPad? How are you putting Apple's technology to use then on delivering this?
Yeah. So we're using the camera functionality, and a really, really sexy measuring interface.
Yeah, we've got to see this because this is awesome. Okay. I have to say. So I have to put these glasses on, which means I can't see anything that I'm doing. So we're all fully with Muller now. So I've got these.
That password. Okay.
So
The HSBC password while you're in there.
Who said that?
No, I'm Steve Barclays and I'm steaming.
So now, this is just a normal iPad, isn't it? This just got a lens on the front.
Yeah. So what we have is just this back plate, because we need some extra optical equipment to move the camera position from the corner to the middle. If we didn't do that, we're likely to get some horizontal parallax problems.
Right. Okay. So this is just effectively reflecting the image from the normal camera.
Exactly.
Into it. It's not
with prisms.
Yeah, it's just a prism. Out. Yeah, it's not. Yeah. So it's using standard Apple technology to do this.
Okay.
Just and, with a bit of, bit,
what we want to
of,
do
yep.
is take one front photo.
Yeah.
And then a side photo, and between the two we can build a 3D image of the head with the spectacles on, and from that point we can take all the various
and all of this happens in the iPad.
Yep, it does.
All right. So get your picture okay. then, mate. I don't sit still for anything for anyone.
Yeah.
You're going to need that new iPad processing power to get that head in 3D.
Oh, dude.
All right, Ewan.
You might need a Mac Pro, actually.
Selfie number one.
Oh, that's cherry.
Okay, Ewan, please face the camera.
So now I have to look this way to get the side view. There we go.
I've done this recently, but I was at the constabulary.
Can't believe cool. you buggers are making me laugh when I'm supposed to be holding still.
Okay,
that's what she said.
So it looks like that lens has a bit of a zoom on it too, right?
Yeah, you're right, Adam. We need a defined fixed zoom for the mathematics of the distances.
So you've got to know exactly what you're getting in with no distortion Precisely. On the lens, because if you're using the standard iPad. Lens has got a slight curvature to it because it's looking for a wider angle.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
So now what? You've got my picture, and then with the interface on the iPad.
Yeah, what we're looking to do is some manual fine tuning. So we find the edges of the lens, plus the eye position, and also on the side view, we're looking to get the plane of the lens in the correct position. Once we've got that, we update the data and we get measurements to
so that's the distance between my pupils, the distance to the bottom of the lenses, and the sizes of the lenses relative to everything else.
Plus this one here is the inclination of the lens towards your cheek, which has a huge impact on a progressive lens on the performance.
Well, you're looking through more glass if you've got a tilt, haven't you? Because, I mean, it might be fractional, but you know the glass is going to get thicker as the angle goes down.
The optical calculations change dramatically based on this angle. And you'll know if you have your progressive lenses on and tilt them in and out, your vision will feel very, very odd.
Yeah, right.
The distance from eye to the back surface of the lens, which is another critical parameter. And lastly, how much the frame curves around the head. So what we've got is a position of lens in front of the eye that says, I suppose, as individuals, a fingerprint. So we've got a three-way calculation. We've got the distance the lens is from the eye, the angle that the lens sits away from your from the vertical plane, and also from on a horizontal plane, how much the lens angles in this dimension as well.
To fit your head, yeah.
And all of those will have a combined huge impact on the overall performance.
Right.
So what we can do with those measurements now is custom make the lens. So we have the base design that we know we want to make here, but we will change the optics and optimize them to that exact fitting position.
Bloody hell. And all of that then fits in with the less stress and the way of manufacturing the final glasses, so that those calculations aren't wasted with poor manufacturing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That's awesome. Don, are you going to buy a pair of these?
Well, I wouldn't mind, actually. I mean... When you think about, you know, because I can understand exactly what the guy's saying about, you know, when they are measuring by eye, there's bound to be all sorts of inaccuracies, you know, because it's the human eye measuring another human eye, which is a foot and a half away, it's just not that accurate. But that looks incredible.
Yeah.
No. And it does, the position of the glass, I mean, I've worn glasses since I was seven. So I know, you know just the slightest sort of mispositioning of the frame on your face just screws things up incredibly.
Yeah, no. You were the first person I thought of, I have to say. And Adam as well. I thought of you, mate, because you're a glasses wearer.
Yeah.
But I didn't know Doc was until last night, but...
Well, we all are on this show, aren't we?
We are, like, everyone. Yeah.
We're the respectable bunch.
We are true nerds. It's a requirement.
Probably like four of the oldest guys in tech.
Well, okay.
I was going to say, do we get a group discount?
Well, Adam, you'd be interested to know that the actual frame design and milling process was designed in California.
Hey!
Woo!
There we go.
All the best stuff is.
There we go. By Apple.
And the lens technology is Japanese. And Don, you're only down the road, so we should hook up some time and we'll have a look.
Yeah, sounds good.
There you go. You can have this contraption stuck to your face, mate, at some point. I can't.
So now the tables turn. Is this stuff in the US too?
Yeah. It's been available in the US for a little while, and it's won some really prestigious awards. I have a feeling that they're just rehashing the designs a little bit. They've worked with us somewhat and made the designs a little bit more European. And I think they should be hitting the US stores pretty soon.
Awesome, mate. So, and the thing is, as well, if
Adam, I sent you the link.
Awesome. Yeah.
What makes these awesome is the guy who, I guess, is one of the guys behind it was the guy that invented the Flexons back in the day.
Oh, cool.
Those are my favorite. Those are the like almost unbreakable frames. You can wrap it around your finger in a spiral.
My dad had those.
Yeah, same dude, Mr. Zeter.
We have some similar technology in these.
Oh, sick. Man. I've been because they're so light, I've been handling like they're a feather, and actually they're amazing.
Yes, really cool titanium where it needs the flexibility, and then the carbon fiber is just such a great
so strong, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, that's cool. So you've taken all my measurements, you've got my prescription, and the next thing is to get them made and then send them back. And anyone who buys these glasses is going to get exactly what I've just got from their dispensing optician. They're going to have the whole iPad, they're going to have the framey thing on the front of the face. And
not necessarily.
Okay.
Not every practice has the technology. Certainly in the UK, if you want to contact us at Hoya, we can direct you because we know which practices have the equipment, and we can send you to a local store.
All right, okay. So do you want people to just send, if they want to get in touch with you, do you want to send them an email to me and I'll forward it on?
That sounds perfect.
So you've all got the email address, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and send me an inquiry through and just say, Hoya, please send to Mark, and I'll just forward your contact details onto Mark, and Mark will get in touch with how you can go about getting these. Thanks for bringing that in, man. That is amazing. Right. I've got to say, and really good use of the Apple tech as well. I mean, it's incredible that it's doing so much, because that's actually quite a lot of processing power, I would have thought.
Well, let's do...
You know, the first thing that came to mind when you see the back adapter is that would be just awesome commercially sold for people that use their iPad to video with, because when you video with an iPad, looking at the lens in the corner, everything is always a little crooked, so you actually have to set the iPad up off-center so that you don't habitually look at the middle of the Apple, which you kind of sort of use for head positioning. So it'd be kind of cool just to sell that white thing, just to stick it on and move the lens to the middle for podcaster types like myself. I use my iPad to video a lot, and that thing would be kind of wicked. I've been looking on the Amazon. Nobody sells it.
I guess this is custom made though, mate, just perhaps.
Yeah, so I'm saying, just go put it out and say this is invented by Mark. you can get a good $100 for that.
How will your employer feel about you taking all the credit for this system? Brilliant, mate. Thanks so much for that. So you're coming back on the show in a couple of weeks.
I think I've got some commitments, so 3 weeks, I think.
3 weeks.
And then we'll do a live unboxing and see what you think.
I've never unboxed some glasses before. But the thing that's different as well with this is that you're saying, because of the way these lenses are made, it's easier for me to be limited in what... So the varied focals that I'm going to get are going to be about me looking at the screen and then looking at the camera and back at the screen and keeping just that range in focus.
Yeah, what you need, like most of us tech geeks who needs a varifocal or progressive lens is a more specialised lens. Varifocals are designed to be general purpose.
Yeah.
General purpose vision, we have to make the main priority distance. When you're in the studio, Ewan, your priorities are completely reverse. Distance is not important at all, really.
That's right.
You need amazing vision from about 2 meters away to the front of your desk. So we'll actually give you a varifocal with those preferences built in. So we'll have a really great reading in intermediate zone, but put what compromiser we need to in the distance area.
Now, just again, go back to just the full disclosure of this. You're going to give me a pair of glasses to review, which have to have my prescription, otherwise it's pointless because I'd just say they were crap anyway. but you're happy for me to review them without feeling like I owe you anything for giving me a free set of glasses. Yep. But I've got to say, I've been blown away by what I've seen today. Mark's been here for about 2 hours, and all we've done is talk about glasses and eat pizza and drink beer. So, and talk about glasses. So there we go. Thanks for bringing that in, mate.
Great.
Super.
Pleasure, Ian.
Join in for the rest of the show if you've got an opinion, pal.
And, I will. I'll hang around for sure.
We should work our way steadily through the Apple news. New iPod, chaps.
Mm-hmm.
Were we blown away, or were we kind of,
With the touch is an impressive upgrade and long overdue.
I got one.
Oh, you got one?
Yeah.
Why didn't you box
it?
It
came out an hour ago, so I've only been able to just literally power it up and have a look. But yeah, it looks pretty sweet. Screen, 4 inches. I'm so used to the 6 Plus. It's ridiculous. It's tiny, but that's just because I'm used to the 6 Plus screen. But it looks pretty good. I need to spend some time interested in the camera because it's got a greater camera in and the faster processor. I mean, it feels really snappy just from using the menus and going into the music application, etc. It feels just as quick as the 6 Plus, really, to be honest.
Clocked a little slower though from a little bit, benchmarking, right?
But in real life usage, it seems pretty snappy.
Right, and that's all that matters. It's just interesting to see what they do, and I guess the rumor is Apple wanted to make sure that the battery life was up there. So it would make sense because if you got the same processor as the 6, as you noted, Don, the iPod Touch is much smaller, so you're going to have less room for battery. So you're going to want to sort of tweak the specs a little bit so that you can maintain the battery life with a little less battery actually behind the screen.
Or the big screen is on the 6 Plus, though, because with it being a smaller screen, it presumably needs less draw overall, so they can get away with
that too.
A smaller battery in theory, but
I think they estimate it's clocked at 1.1 gigahertz versus I think 1.39 on the 6 iPhone 6.
The Geekbench test has come out rather well. It does show it as fairly swift.
I was really shocked because I thought they were going to go with an A7 in there, and the fact that they did the A8 and the M8 motion coprocessor, I mean, that's a really nice bump up. So I think that sort of says, in a way that they're saying, this is really, we want to make sure that you get the gaming experience that you get on the iPhone with, some of the stuff, some of the higher end games that are coming out for iOS devices, which is probably good for their target market. Cause I would imagine this is the iPod Touch still sells really well in the demographic where it's a parent getting it for their kid and, they don't want them on an iPhone yet.
Yeah, and Windroid in the chat room saying it's got 120 frames per second slow-mo as well. Don't forget all the standard stuff that's in the 6 Plus. Battery life in the older touchpad in the touch is really bad. And Bookery says a lower clock speed, more battery life.
Now, Don, you didn't want to get one of those new colors?
Not really. No. I just stuck with the silver one. I was going to go with the space gray, but I think everything I've got now is space gray, so... the real reason for me getting this, not only just to try it out, is to use it as an iOS 9 test device as well, because we're in that funny period now when we've got iOS 8, which I don't really want to put on my main phone, and I have a separate phone which I use for doing the screencasts, and I can't put iOS 9 on that yet because I'm still using that to do screencasts. So I got this one to put iOS 9 on to have a play with iOS 9 in the iPhone form factor. So that was the main reason.
Thing that came to my mind was in my business aspect, right? I have a problem where I'm engraving all these cool things and I post it naturally, instantly on Instagram because it really helps. I get a lot of business from Instagram. What I keep forgetting to do is post it on the actual business side. And part of that is when you use a 1-password 32-character-generated passwords, switching in and out of accounts on Instagram is a pain in the butt. So it's almost worth the $249 for me to pick up a 32-gigabyte one of these because it's going to stay in the office just for the whole point of Instagramming the business stuff. I mean, so even besides just making it a kid thing, it's a pretty cool business device. And also another thing that you can use it for, your voice chatting or voice talking or whatever is, or using it as a secondary camera. And so the business aspect of it caught me right away. And also the kind of idea of using it as a point and shoot for those people who are really, really over, say, that form factor of camera, but they don't want to like store all the images in their phone. This is a cool way to get a really, really good and effective point and shoot that's light and easy to carry around. And on a travel, you would never worry about killing your phone battery because you can use this mostly as camera. And that's pretty impressive to me.
Yeah, my question was going to be actually that there was a comment there from I think it was you, Adam, about it's going to be good for their target market. But my question is this a kid's device or is there still any adults that they're looking for with this? I mean, what is the iPod Touch market?
Yeah, see, there's an interesting thing that probably doesn't occur as much in the UK, but maybe it does. I wouldn't know. But here in the US, there's a lot of people who don't want a true smartphone for one reason or the other. Mostly they don't want like a big expensive contract and they don't want a big data plan. So there's still a lot of people that go with like a little pay as you go, like flip phone, or I guess they're moving to smartphones now, but limited functionality smartphone where they basically give you the phone and you get a month to month plan that's really cheap. And so that market would also be interested in something like an iPod Touch where they want something where they can take all their music with them. They can do the camera and video stuff, do all their apps and iOS games, but they're really not interested in a cell phone contract or actually having a true smartphone. So that's another segment of the market that's sort of served by this.
And like Don said, developers alone cover a large portion of the touch market. All of my friends that run basically, hand-based dev houses, they all have a team of touches floating around that they use for testing. And it's a great way to do it without worrying about messing up your main phone. And then another thing would be if you are in, say, an Android phone person, but there are some things that you want to do in the iOS realm, but you, again, like Adam said, you don't want to get a whole full-blown phone. This is another great device. And at the lowest one, only being $200, a lot of people consider that to be cheap. So
as
a general discussion about the iPod market, is it becoming more irrelevant to Apple now, or is it still holding a lot of relevance?
Oh yeah,
it's irrelevant.
Oh, good.
No. At the numbers that they sell regular, it's hard to see. I even almost said it, right. Regular devices. That would have been really rude. at the amount that they sell other devices at, it's irrelevant. But to their irrelevancy is some company's entire GDP.
Yeah. I mean, point. I mean, and two, if you look at what the numbers are going to be for, say, Apple Watch this year, I mean, they're still selling more iPods than Apple Watches, so... it depends on how you want to look at it. But as far as the overall makeup of, what's bringing in revenue for Apple, the iPod isn't going to be anything that's going to be super significant and hasn't been for a while. But I think it's still a staple product that Apple wants to keep around in a certain capacity. Obviously, exemplified by the updates they did this round.
So what's the shelf life of the iPod range now then? When do we expect it to disappear?
I expect the Nano to be the next one to be just blown away, because that, even this round, I don't understand where that fits in the product mix, other than the small segment of people who want a cheap iPod that plays music and is smaller than a touch, because it's US price is like $149. I forget the UK price for a 16 gig Nano, and for $199 you can get a 16 gig touch, which has a ton more functionality. So I can't really, I can't really fathom, what the target market for the Nano is right now, other than this really specific, hey, I want to exercise device, but I want something with a screen. And so I'm not going to get the Shuffle. I'm going to pay the extra $50 and get the Nano.
It's $149 for a Nano. You know where a Nano would be kind of good is in the car. Or exercise. I don't know. I wouldn't even get it for the car.
Well, the big thing that surprised me with the Nano and the Shuffle is that they're not compatible with Apple Music. You can't sync Apple Music tracks. You can only synchronize either purchased or your own music, which I think wasn't really made very clear when they announced. In fact, I don't remember seeing anything about
that.
It was
on the back of
actually bought them and started to try them that they've discovered that this was the case. And I would have thought refreshing the iPod range at this point would be to take advantage of, you know, the whole Apple
Music ecosystem. I was just about to say exactly
and to have
that.
Those two models not being compatible with the streaming model. And I can understand why they're not. But to not build in the functionality in some way is quite surprising, really.
I was just about to say exactly that. If you're going to run a music event, the next thing to refresh clearly is going to be the iPod, because that's the big music device as was, and it's not,
That thing has to be licensing. Mm. And I've been digging into this a little bit. If you go in and you look at Apple Music tracks, so if you download an Apple Music track to iTunes, and then go into the Get Info window, right, and go to the, I think it's the Advanced tab or whatever that last tab is called. I can't remember right now off the top of my head. But you go in there, I mean, it lists those tracks as FairPlay version 2 DRM's tracks, which is the latest version of FairPlay that they had right before they switched over. So ostensibly, if it was just standard FairPlay version 2, you would think those files would play on any iPod that's out there in the market. So I think this is really a software thing, is what I'm kind of coming to the conclusion on, is they've got a switch somewhere in the software that's just blocking those files from being transferred over. I don't think that the DRM, I don't think that they redid the FairPlay DRM. This is my own theory. And so that says to me, this is all about the licensing. And I think the problem is that because the iPod Shuffle and the Nano don't have any Wi-Fi connectivity, there's no way for them to phone home. So if you were to download an Apple Music track and be able to sync that over to the device, if you never hooked it back up to iTunes or anything, then, you know, you could have that file on there indefinitely, maybe even after canceling your Apple Music subscription. And that's probably freaking out the music industry. Now, I mean, they could put a timeout in there. There's lots of ways to handle this. Mm-hmm. Other services have handled this. So I think it's only a matter of negotiation that Apple needs to do with the different rights holders, and then tweaking the software a little bit. So I think the iPods will eventually get the Apple Music stuff. I think it's probably bogged down in some weird licensing talks.
Yeah, I mean, and just to say, the iPod Touch is fine. That works great with Apple Music.
Yeah. Because it has Wi-Fi, it can connect and phone home and check and go, okay, do you still have an Apple Music subscription? Okay, you can keep that music on there. You know, I think that's what it's coming down to, is Apple needs a system and needs to be able to show their partners that, hey, someone's not going to be able to subscribe to Apple Music, load up 16 gigs of music and hand it off to somebody. And then they have those files, you know, as long as they never hook it back into iTunes or something like that.
So the other thing there's a few stories kicking around at the moment that with the iPad Pro allegedly coming in the September window, and the iPad Air 2, there's a suggestion that there'll be another upgrade to iPad Mini, but then Apple will cap that. And I was just wondering whether the iPod Touch is going to grow in size to iPhone 6 Plus or slightly greater proportions, and that would then make iPad Mini obsolete, and they would drop it from the line.
I don't think so.
I think there are a lot of Mini fans out there, and that form factor is something that a lot of people are in love with. The other thing is, there are a ton of devices, or accessories rather, is for a better way to put it, that allow the Mini to act as point of sale systems and, you know, some of these other things that are out there. So, of course, in the general market, a lot of people love that size. But then in the point-of-sale system, or, you know, the sort of, again, the business aspect, custom devices like what Mark was just using as well, there's way too many out there for the iPad Mini to disappear so easily.
Yeah.
I also don't think they're going to want to bring the touch size up, because, again, if you look at the Nano, I see the Nano going away and them just having the Shuffle for those people who want something really robust, throw in the bag, take to the gym, who don't want to buy an Apple Watch, you know, some cheap device like that just for doing music. And then you jump up to the Touch. And I think that 4-inch size is the perfect size for that, because it's it's big enough to be useful, but small enough that you can still, you know, strap it on an arm strap or use it for working out. And I think a lot of people do use the Touch for working out. And so if they get rid of the Nano, they need a music playing device that has a screen. And I think the Touch is it. So I see it going Shuffle, Touch, you know, and then Mini, iPhone.
Okay. Windrider in the chat room is saying it's different markets, 4:3 versus widescreen. Because, of course, your iPad is a lot more... A lot more 4:3-ish, even though I don't think it is 4:3 exactly. But, Steve, have you got any thoughts on this? Because I'm either that or you're convinced that you're on mute.
No, I'm not on mute. I've just been listening to this wonderful conversation here. You know, I was thinking about the comment there that the Shuffle would remain as a kind of, you know, throw it in the backpack, clip it on your sleeve type of device. But I honestly wonder if we'll see the Shuffle disappearing as well and being replaced by the Apple Watch once the numbers get up there a little bit. I have not used my Apple Watch as a music device at this point, but you can store music on there. I think we're going to see a lot more capability coming up as soon as Apple comes out with WatchOS 2, simply because it can communicate directly with Wi-Fi networks, and that should resolve some of the problems that you see right now with syncing music. But, you know, I could just see that as, especially if you make this a little bit more waterproof, see the watch as kind of the future Shuffle. There is, of course, a price difference. I think the Shuffle is, what, $59, and the watch is a little bit more expensive than that. Mm. But is it really going to be that type of thing that Apple wants to continue making these little devices for a long time? I don't know. That's a good question. In terms of the Nano, I think Adam really had the, you know, right on the head there. The Nano just doesn't make any sense to me anymore. It doesn't run iOS. It's running this kind of oddball operating system all to itself. I just don't see the Nano staying around all that much longer.
Interesting. I mean, none of us can predict anything, of course, with Apple's Apple's
I wish.
They know what we want before we know what we want. That's all we can say.
True.
Apple are facing a class action lawsuit over the clock-off employee bag checking issue. Apple face a class action lawsuit, writes Mac Rumors, brought against it by retail employees in California who are subjected to ongoing bag checks that often cause them to remain at work for 10 to 15 minutes after they've finished working. Employees allege Apple subjected them to a mandatory bag checks that were embarrassing and demeaning.
I'm going to call BS, and I hate this. When it first came out like 5 years ago, actually, I think the story might even be longer than that. When I worked at Apple, first of all, maybe I'm jaded because I did military first. When you would leave military, when you leave the room, especially during what we would call, say, a red level situation, you're a lot of times walking around base with live ammo. Every time you check out, you have to get checked to make sure you're not moving any live ammo into a situation where someone might get in some harm away. So maybe I'm used to being back checked. When you apply for a job where you work in a high-end retail, they do the same thing at Dior. They do the same thing at Sears, for Christ's sake. You could work at freaking Sears in the craftsman department, and they do back check. That is retail. If you take a job in retail, you're going to get back checked. If you don't like it, there's McDonald's, brother. Go flip a freaking burger. Don't be a dick and sue somebody because they need to ensure that, you know, stuff's not being taken. Now, the other thing you need to know, this policy does not exist if employees in almost every retail outlet aren't the biggest cause of shrinkage. So you might be the guy who's the honest person, but there's enough people out there that pilfer things from work. And almost every store will tell you the number one cause of shrinkage is internal. So that just, you know, I want to be a race car driver. And I don't want to wear a Hans device. I don't know. Shut up. Go away.
Well, I think the only thing
for the kids at home, explain shrinkage.
Oh, Doc. Sorry.
Because we're not talking about the kind of shrinkage that, you know, happens to surfers in Hawaii, right?
Okay. So shrinkage is the inventory term for, I'm sorry, is the industry term for inventory loss, basically stealing.
There you go.
But they call it shrinkage so as not to make people feel bad.
The Jeff Gamut word is shriveling. Right. I mean, there is a certain point of don't employ someone if you've got any doubts of their honesty. And also, I would suggest that through my own extensive field study, 95% of the people I've ever met in life are perfectly fine. They would never steal from anyone.
This is always about follow the money, though, really. I mean, really, the issue here is not the embarrassing part. I mean, they're just using that as part of the lawsuit because it sounds good when you're arguing it. The issue, I think, here, right, is that they held employees after they had clocked out and they weren't paying them. So you're getting 10 minutes of time taken up that you're not being compensated for, right?
See, I'm going to say that's padded too, Adam, because, like, okay, and Don was recently here, so I don't know if Don visited the stores here in Honolulu. The Waikiki store and the Ala Moana store are the busiest foot traffic stores in the damn near 400-plus stores. It doesn't take us 10 minutes to get back checked.
Like, no, I know. I
think they padded that, number one. And
sure.
All management really has to do is say, okay, clock out after you back check. But here's the problem with that. The clock is in the back. They back check you sort of in the front. So you got to get back checked, then walk back into where the expensive stuff is to check out.
No point.
Right. No, you can't do it that way. I know. I totally get it. I worked at Upper Deck, the trading card company, and we got bag checked because they were worried about us stealing, you know, trading cards, valuable trading cards, and pulling them out of the company. Now it turns out later that the company themselves were doing some of that, but that's a whole nother story.
The fact that they were valuable trading cards is only because they were overpriced shit to start with, and they withheld certain numbers of them so that it would increase the value of them.
Well, we started, one of the things the company started doing was buying up sports memorabilia. So they'd buy up, you know, really game used equipment and stuff like that, and they started incorporating it into the card designs themselves. So we actually had rooms where there was, you know, like baseballs and hockey pucks and bats and all sorts of things from famous people and events and stuff like that. And there were you know, signature cards that we had received from certain athletes. So there was a lot of valuable material lying around as well. So, but the point was like, it didn't take very long. Everybody was treated equally. Everybody got examined in the same way. I mean, it was pretty much, if you had a bag on, it's like, open it up. It's just like a, you know, what you go through at the airport. You know, if they pull you aside and they're like, look through your bag, right? They open it up, they take the little stick, look through the different pockets and go, okay, you're all right.
And if the main thing is, as well, as it's not really to capture criminals. I think it's mainly meant to, you know, to act as a deterrent. You know that there's a possibility you're going to get your bag checked. Well, you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good job. That's the truth. You know, the other thing real quick on this is you had mentioned the part about, don't hire people you don't trust. I would definitely say that that's true to an extent, because Apple and every other company for that matter, even when you hire yourself, you kind of go through the best vetting process as possible. But two things that happens, people who normally good people and never do anything wrong get put in a situation that they weren't expecting, and they have a tendency to sort of test their morals a little bit. Many people have been through this. So I think even the best people sometimes get caught in a situation where, you know, they try something stupid. And a lot of them are in jail for it. You know, that's one. The other part is, again, you look at the stuff like Sonny, what's his face, that comes up once a year and tells everybody about a week from now what's going to happen in September. Like, again, this doesn't happen if you didn't have cats like that that were, you know, going around and leaking to the bloggers of the world, sending stuff to Steve and the crew at Apple World Today. Maybe you also still wouldn't have this problem. So it's a combination of those two things as well.
It's a hard one, isn't it? But I know that there's a certain element of me always looks at stuff like this, you know, like retail stores, when they even look at you as you're a customer, and lets me think, hang on, you know, you're only catching 5% of people here. Stop treating everyone else like they are criminals. You have to accept.
It's actually two, to be honest with you.
2%.
I studied this in school because we call it the Neiman Marcus effect. And Neiman Marcus has promised that they wouldn't really do it, because they say only about 2% of the people will actually do something dumb enough to cause them harm. So that's why they just don't do it. And then recently, somewhere within the last 2 years, even Neiman Marcus gave up on that altruistic thought.
Yeah. There's limits as well. Insurance companies have put limits on the amount that you can use. So like a store like the local supermarket will have £250,000 a year of insured losses. And then after that, they're picking up the tab themselves as well. So I think that's a deterrent that's come in as well for them. You were talking last night about this, Doc, and it really is an Apple subject more than a Big Show subject. Advanced talks from Apple and Samsung for the standardized e-card system. Tell us a bit more about this. eSIM system, sorry.
So the eSIM system is going to allow the hardware manufacturers, number one, to get the space back from having to put in a stupid SIM slot, say that 20 times real fast, at 5 a.m. So they're going to be able to, A, get rid of that space, which they can, you know, fill back up with batteries or something else. And the second thing, as a traveler, it's going to make it easier to ebb and flow between the borders without having to get a different SIM. You know, whatever's, I think another thing an eSIM might allow one to do is, like, in my particular case, like, I could add a business number and my personal number to the same device because the SIM is basically would be electronic. So you could literally run two different lines, and there are some two-line phones out there, but I think it, all in all, it's just amazing. And I think my favorite part of the story, as I mentioned yesterday, is the fact that Apple and Samsung took off their boxing gloves and picked up a baseball bat and went towards the carriers. And after this is over, they'll probably go back to slapping each other around. But for right now, they're back to back, like, bring it, sisters.
Well, that's the interesting thing, because at first glance, you look at this story and you think, well, okay, so this is going to really lock consumers in, and it's going to really make it difficult for consumers to switch. But actually, it's the opposite. Because it's an internal SIM, you can say, okay, I want this carrier. And then a week later, if you don't like that carrier, you can go, I don't want that carrier anymore. And you can force them, whereas at the moment, I mean, there's some horrific stuff in the UK here with people saying, oh, well, you can sign up online. And then when you actually want to cancel, they go, no, you have to physically send us a letter to the following address in the Outer Hebrides. And then we'll cancel your subscription.
What's the Outer Hebrides?
It's a tiny set of islands, mate, that are just before the Faroe Islands. And it's cold. Even in summer, it's cold.
The Faroes
Don,
were great,
Don,
by
there's
the
no
way.
Fun laughing the at the guys.
Shetlands, Orkneys, Faroes, Hebrides, there you go. Take your pick. They're all in different locations, but they're all just islands. Sheep outnumber the people probably in most of those, I would have thought. Faroe Islands, I really fancy going to. It's supposed to be really beautiful.
Mm. I know about the Faroe Islands. I did know about that.
And it's about, because they beat Scotland in football. But there's a massive puffin population there as well.
Yes, there
puffin
is.
Puffin as in the bird, or puffer as in... soft
in Colorado.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. I thought you were going to explain something there about nightclub strategy. Batwench wants the job of patting you down when you leave the store, Doc.
Oh, no problem. I'm going to wear my special knickers for that.
Matt Cass is off to make his call, so he's muted his screen for us, so he's off. Anyway, Craggy Island. Thank you, Muller. Oh, that's about, never mind. We're pretty thin on Apple news this week. The A9 chip's going on and allegedly gone into production. And what's interesting is there's a story saying, you wait for this, chaps, this is going to stun you, something rotten. Apple predicted to beat expectations in the third quarter on strong iPhone sales. Really? You'd have thought there'd be a strong iPhone sale in September? No. 6S is allegedly going to come, but they're talking about the fact that they're going to exceed... they're talking about estimations of 50.9 billion of revenue.
It's a shock. Wow.
And 49.3 million iPhone units, up by 40%. The only thing I thought when I thought that, sorry, because Apple are bringing out a new phone. It's going to sell by the shitload, regardless, even if it's a watch that a very limited number of people want. So that's not exactly the best journalism you've ever seen. But what I thought was quite interesting is to ask the question, do people now buy the latest version of Apple every time, or are the people, because they're on the two-year rolling contract, they pick the new one that comes out? And if you look at processing power and functionality from 5 to 5S, you've got a lot more crunch in the second half, but you've got the same form factor. Massive form factor change from the 5 to the 6, 5S to 6, but then... you're not going to get an awful lot of processing power change, perhaps, from the 6 to the 6 Plus, and you're not going to get a form factor change. So I wonder whether people upgraded on the first point cycle or the S point cycle. question.
Kelly likes to call that evolution cycle versus revolution cycle. I swap my device every year, regardless. So
I'm asking the wrong people, though. Clearly, yes. All right.
Yeah. I think most people tend to stick to the 2-year cycle, to be honest, because it's still awfully expensive to replace the phone. I mean, I've sort of got into the habit now of sort of buying the phone outright, so I'm not stuck into a contract and just have a data and voice SIM. But, you know, that's quite an expensive proposition. So I think most people who are still on a contract will just go with the 2-yearly cycle. And it doesn't really matter, I don't suppose, which one you jump on. I suppose that if you're on the, the initial launch, like the 5 or the 6, you sort of get... You feel as though you're getting a new phone straight away because it's the change in the form factor. But you know, even on the supplementary cycle, there's still a lot of changes, a lot of innovation goes on to the second version of the phone when it comes out.
You know, Don, you hit something really right on the head there too. I think what Steve would tell you, like one of the things I used to always get my nads tapped over was when people say certain things are expensive versus not expensive, and I kind of hated that terminology because people use that to make fun of us, you know. It turns out that expensive is based off of a value proposition, as in what you feel is worth versus not. Like, I know some cats that walk around with $600 sneakers and they wouldn't mm-hmm. call that expensive.
Yeah.
But they would never get a new iPhone every 2 years, you know? And I'm like, yeah, but your Jordans that you wear are going to be like worn out in 6 months. So they don't even have the life value of your iPhone and they can't play Bob Marley hits. So like, you know, a value proposition is better explanation, but it doesn't sound as well, you know, like how does this align against your values? It doesn't sound as well when it's in writing. So it's very easy to call us, you know, like sheep or lambs or fanboys or this or that, because we feel there's an X amount of value in paying a pretty decent coin for a device that we probably make almost that much money out of in a couple of weeks, you know? So I think you're right on that. Is for some people, and like you had actually touched on it earlier, you know, a standard issue phone is cool enough. So they don't see why they would want to replace it every year. But I think in our position, we kind of almost need to, in order to properly do our job or pretend.
Well, I mean,
that's a good excuse to tell the lady anyway.
I missed the 5X. I missed the 5X completely. I just went from a 3G to a 4S. So I had 3G for a long period of time, a 4S, and I wasn't tied into a contract because I bought every phone I've had since 2001 SIM-free. So it wasn't that at all. I just didn't feel like I was getting anything else. I wasn't being stopped from doing anything, but from the 3G to the 4S, I saw a definite difference. And then from the 4S to the 6, I saw a massive difference. Because also, it handed me that larger screen factor, which I've been bitching and moaning about for Christ knows how long, as you all reminded me. So I got something. I buy a new phone. And it's not because I'm tight. It's because I just don't see the point if I'm not getting anything from it.
But is it true though that if people are on a 2-yearly cycle, they get, in effect, a free phone at the end of the 2 years anyway? So, you know, they will just upgrade anyway.
Mm.
Whereas if you're buying your phone and you're buying it outright, well then it's slightly different than if at the end of 2 years you think, well actually, do I really want to spend another £600? Because this phone, actually, I don't think it's that big a deal.
But that was my question, Don, is which 2-year cycle do you pick? Do you pick the 6, the initial version 1 cycle, or do you pick the S cycle?
I think a lot of people don't have the choice. They're just in a particular cycle because of when they took the contract out, like 6 or 7 years
I just wondered if you were kind of aligning yourself with one or the other, which one you would pick. Would you pick, let's say everyone here has to have a 2-year contract and they've got to choose to either go on version 1 cycle or S cycle. Which mm-hmm. cycle would you pick?
I'd probably go with the version 1.
Right.
Version 1 for me too.
Because mm-hmm. it is such a difference. It's like a, you know.
Mark saying version 1, Muller?
In effect, a brand new.
Version 1.
Muller saying version 1 as well. Doc?
I would definitely go version 1, but I don't want to play this game because I like buying a new phone every month, every year.
I'm with Doc. I'm the same way. But yeah, definitely you want to be on the version 1 cycle.
See, I would see a benefit for version 1 cycle on the 6, but I wouldn't see benefit of version 1 cycle on the 5 because it was too close to the 4 for me. That's why I didn't upgrade it. I saw the 4S and I looked at the 5 and thought, okay, it's a little bit different in shape, but it's not a lot. Whereas 6 was massive change.
I think the difference is, as well, is a lot of the changes are internal, aren't they? And I know we do get the form factor change, but, you know, the way the camera keeps getting upgraded and the internals and the processor speed, etc. So you can't really sort of tell from the form factor whether or not it's a viable time to switch. Yeah. But I'd still go with the version one anyway.
Okay, excellent. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. They're absolutely fantastic. I emulated some of you. I was a complete Wally last week. I bought Rankin.photography off them, and I didn't go through the BTN site, and I didn't use the BTN offer code. I just forgot. Well, hang on. Have we frozen?
I'm getting a lot of received packet loss from you all of a sudden. I don't know what's going on.
Let's start the feed again. I can edit, don't worry. UK2, yes, I didn't go and use their own sodding offer codes. What an arse. Couldn't believe it. 20% off and I didn't do it. And it was 20 quid for the domain as well because it was a dot photography one, so it's one of the elite stuff ones. Go to them if you want VPS, VPN, co-location services, domains, dedicated servers. They are the people for you. Go to bridgetechnetwork.com/sponsors. You'll see all the offer codes and then there'll be a link to click you through to UK2. They'll know we sent you. You will get tons off your basket when you do it and you'll be happy as Larry. And also, if you're in the US, don't switch off when we talk about this, because 100tb.com are the people that give us the live server. So the live feed that you're seeing that's just stalled, but I think that's probably more my fault with Wirecast than it is with the server. That's $139 a month. That's the basic entry-level server. That's what we've got, and we've got content management that ensures that the world gets our shows 2 seconds after we transmit. It is superb. So check out 100db.com and UK2, and if you get an opportunity, as with all of the people that support and sponsor British Tech Network, please take the time to stop on social media and tweet out how grateful you are for the happiness.
You and your... going Cylon-y.
We're off again.
Have you gone?
Yeah. Can you not hear me at all now? And it's all gone. Holy shit. So, as you can see, Virgin Media have let us down badly and it's all finished rather rapidly. So, I'm afraid that's the end of the show. What the cool things were, we'll never actually know. Oh, well. If you want to get a hold of Don McAllister, you can get him at Don McAllister on Twitter. And don't forget, you've got Screencasts Online, because Screencasts Online is the additional source if you want to be a Mac user. If you're new to Mac, you've got to sign up for Screencasts Online because it is invaluable to get you going. Maccast is one of the oldest Mac podcasts out that you can get, and that's Anderman Christensen's podcast. Look at him for at Maccast on all the social networks and anywhere else. And Doc is available on at Doc Rock, and everything else is all at Doc Rock. And Steve Sandy is at Apple World Today, if you want to check them out. Brand new publication, in inverted commas, site for Apple News and Tech. Just going to bring Mark back in. Thanks, mate.
My pleasure.
Thanks, brilliant. It was so we'll look forward to seeing you in 3 weeks. We'll have you back in the studio. We'll have a decent internet connection then, which will hopefully mean that we can see the glasses.
Yeah, great experience. Really appreciate you having me down as well.
Pleasure, mate. No, I hope, I'm glad you've enjoyed it. Yeah. But and get your nephew down.
I will.
Yeah. And on that bombshell, that was my audition for Top Gear. I don't think you'll give it me. See you next week. Sorry for listening. Oh, shit.